The Hermann Monument is located in North Germany and commemorates a Germanic war chief who famously led an alliance of Germanic tribes who ambushed and annihilated three Roman legions and their auxiliaries in the Battle of the Teutoburg Forest in 9 AD. A victory that would precipitate the Roman Empire's permanent strategic withdrawal from Germania, after which the Romans made no more concerted attempts to conquer Germanic territories east of the Rhine River. Contemporary and modern historians have generally regarded Arminius's victory as Rome's greatest defeat, one of the most decisive battles recorded in military history, and as a turning point in world history. In 98 AD, the Roman historian Cornelius Tacitus wrote a text called About the Origin and Mores of the Germanic Peoples, or Germania as it came to be called. All copies of Germania were lost during the Middle Ages, except for a single handwritten copy which resurfaced in Germany in 1455, but was then brought to Italy. In the 1940s, the Germania was taught in German schools and widely celebrated as a comprehensive account of the ancient Germanic people. The Nazis liked the description of their ancient ancestors as simple, brave, loyal, and pure. Keep in mind that there had been no Germany before 1871, and part of the reason that Germany exists today was thanks to the stories documented in that book by Tacitus. In his telling, the Germans possessed, quote, fierce blue eyes, tawny hair, huge bodies. They prized freedom, scorned luxury, and esteemed military courage above all else. They were a people of sturdy values, for whom good laws were no substitute for good habits. In the land of the Germans, Tacitus writes, quote, nobody laughs off vice, and to corrupt and to be corrupted is not called modern times. Pointedly, he observed that the Germans were not tainted by intermarriage with any other nations, but rather existed as, quote, a distinct, unadulterated people that resembles only itself. It described a proud, brave, and virtuous people, but the Germans were not one nation. Tacitus lists 50 tribes that were united to defeat Rome. The manuscript made its way to Germany eventually in 2009 for an exhibit marking the 2000th anniversary of Arminius's victory.
Germany had long been a prized target for the Romans, and under the Emperor Augustus, the legions had subdued the local tribes, or so they thought. Many German soldiers had fought with the legions in their European campaigns. One of them, Arminius, had fought so well that the Romans had made him a Knight of the Empire. Even though he left the army to return to Germany, the Romans still counted him as an ally. But that trust would prove fatal. Arminius told the Roman commander Verus of an uprising in northern Germany and advised him to take three legions there to deal with it. When Verus headed north in his trust and ignorance, he was walking into a full-scale rebellion, a rebellion planned by Arminius himself. As a former Roman officer, Arminius knew exactly how to set the trap. Verus had taken with him three legions and auxiliaries, about 20,000 soldiers in all, plus 10,000 civilians, the regular camp followers. Verus was so unsuspecting that he took a shortcut through a narrow gap between a forest and a swamp, just as Arminius had hoped.
It began to rain, and they were making their way between the mountain on one side and the marsh to the other side. And then came the initial German attack, which was launched by spears from some distance at first, which killed quite a few of the Romans and put them into confusion.
Arminius had caught the legions at their most vulnerable. On open fields, Roman discipline was almost unbeatable. But in the depths of the German forest, the legions had no answer to the guerrilla tactics of their opponents. The fighting lasted 3 days and ended in a complete disaster for the Romans. Three entire legions and their followers, some 30,000 people, were slaughtered. Only a few hundred escaped. The news caused panic and disbelief in Rome. Overnight, the empire had lost 3 of its 28 legions, more than 10% of its army. For years afterwards, Augustus roamed the palace screaming, "Quintilius Verus, give me back my legions." Rome would never conquer Germany, but it would send soldiers to the same German forest a few years later to discover the fate of the lost legions.
They came across an awful scene of unburied jumbles of bones lying around and skulls pounded into tree trunks and military equipment scattered everywhere and so forth. And they tried to gather up the bones and give these Roman comrades a decent burial.
In 89, not one, not two, but 3 legions were annihilated in a devastating defeat for Roman ambitions, effectively ending Rome's ambitions across the Rhine. And the man who inflicted that defeat is up there.
Arminius, Hermann the German. This colossal statue marks what was thought to be the spot where Varus, the Roman commander, and his 3 legions met their end. In fact, we now know that Arminius won his victory some 50 miles to the northwest of this monument. In 1987, traces of the slaughtered legions and of Arminius' own battle tactics were found at a place called Calcresa. The Romans, some 18,000 in number, were heading for their winter quarters on the Rhine. As they marched, they had thick forest on one side, marshes on the other. The nature of the ambush was this. Arminius had built a Roman-style turf wall on the edge of the forest that served to funnel the Romans along a narrow track. This is a reconstruction of a section of that wall topped with a wooden palisade. And this is a preserved section of the bog that lay on the other side of the track. When the Germans poured out, the Romans had nowhere to go except into the bog, where they were either drowned or pursued and butchered.
So who were these Germanic barbarians? In ancient Rome, the Romans used the term barbarian towards non-Romans, such as the Germanics, Celts, Gauls, Iberians, Thracians, Illyrians, and Berbers. The North African Berbers, for example, consider the term derogatory and call themselves Amazigh. In ancient times, Phoenician ships dominated the Mediterranean, and Phoenician colonies occupied many areas which were later considered barbarian. These colonies extended all the way to Great Britain, where tin was mined and combined with copper mined in Cyprus to bring about the Bronze Age, when bronze objects were manufactured and exported far and wide. Could Phoenician influence have included parts of Scandinavia, home to the legendary Vikings? The Phoenician long-range ship is in effect almost identical in both structure and appearance with the later Viking longship of Scandinavia. That said, the Scandinavian Bronze Age started very suddenly with a high culture and artifacts that deteriorated in quality over the centuries. The earlier artifacts are almost identical with similar finds from the Phoenician settlements of the Mediterranean. All over Scandinavia, Norway, Denmark, and particularly in Sweden, we find these magnificent standing stones left behind by the Vikings, covered in ancient carvings and etchings known as runes. Runes are the bits of writing you see on the winding serpents. You usually find them on Viking gravestones. According to Norse mythology, the runes were found by Odin, the supreme god of the Norsemen, while he was hanging on the Tree of Life, the famous Yggdrasil. For 9 days and nights, Odin stayed in the great tree until eventually the runes fell into his hands, revealing their mysteries to him. Odin then passed them to us. Thus, from the start, the runes were associated with magic and are still revered in occult circles, especially during times of ritual. For a more mainstream anthropological perspective, the runes serve the practical function of an alphabet. The runic alphabet, or futhark as it is called, had 24 letters in it originally. Later on, when the Vikings attacked Britain, they took the runes with them, and the futhark grew to 33 letters. According to some esoteric interpretations, the runes also have a mysterious relationship with time, and were used in pagan or shamanistic rituals for purposes of divination or for allegedly lifting the veil into other dimensions. The seventh rune is called Gibo and is in the shape of an X. It has many meanings attributed to it over the ages, such as gift-giving or exchange, sacrifice, partnership, and even sex magic. But also, in more esoteric terms, it means a crossroads between this and the dark hidden world, or subconscious realm described by shamans. The English equivalent to the Gibo rune, or the seventh letter of the English alphabet, is the letter G, which is used in Freemasonry and helps to shed insight onto the true origins of the skull and bone symbol made famous on pirate ships and other places. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an independent anthropologist. Thank you for sharing these videos. I rely on word of mouth and greatly appreciate the positive feedback and comments. Please check out my books available on Amazon. I look forward to seeing you next time, and don't forget to subscribe.